And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We're going to recap preseason game number one, which was Friday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers won that game 20-12. So we'll go over some of the observations and the players that stood out. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. And then we'll look ahead to the week that lies ahead in terms of what is going to take place in practice. They will break camp. They will still keep a regular schedule, but the players, at least the veterans, will not have to stay at the team hotel. So we'll get into all of that as we move forward here on the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul, let's start with the preseason game. This is our first show since Friday night's contest. I know we talked a lot about this on the Giants Radio Network postgame show, but we can rehash some of our observations. One of the biggest storylines was clearly the backup quarterback competition between Josh Johnson and Geno Smith. We saw three quarterbacks on Friday night. Josh Johnson started. Geno Smith came in after. And as Ben McAdoo said, and I think both players admitted, you really had mixed results from both guys.
You really did, and I don't know that either one of them really stepped forward, to be honest with you, Lance. I mean, Josh Johnson was very methodical, did not do anything spectacular, and while Geno Smith appeared to have the hot hand when he came in, and he made some nice throws and did some good things, he also had a very puzzling interception. And this goes back to what I think most of us have thought about both of these quarterbacks throughout their NFL careers. Geno Smith may be able to be the high-risk, high-reward guy, and Josh Johnson may be the game manager. And ultimately, the Giants may have to decide which style of guy do they want to be the number two. I think it's pretty clear that Geno Smith probably has more raw talent and more raw ability to make big plays than Josh Johnson has. But when you see the interception that he threw the other night, it undoes a lot of good.
As well as some of the decision-making, because there were a number of sacks that were given up.
Both of them.
Part of that is the quarterback.
Made some of those.
As well as other factors. So I think you need to take that into consideration. Well, looking at the numbers, Geno Smith was sacked three times. Josh Johnson was sacked three times as well. Geno went 10 of 16 for a buck 14. He had the interception, as Paul mentioned. Josh Johnson was 5 of 10 for 31 yards. The one thing I will say, though, is Geno Smith's first drive seemed to initially ignite the offense.
No doubt. And I understand that. But
but you're looking at the big picture. You're not just looking at one drive.
That word, turnover. That word turnover is a bad, bad word. Could they shorten the word turnover to four letters so that it could be one of those dirty four-letter words?
You want an acronym of some sort?
I mean, it's a bad word. And, you know, teams need to be allergic to those things. I don't know. Coach McAdoo said right after the game, the Geno Smith interception looked like a blind throw to him. That's not good.
Which it did, because nobody seemed to be in the vicinity when he threw that football. So
and
I don't
could
think
talk about
even the basic observer would
we could talk about bad routes all we want, okay? That ball was thrown with no one there except the Steeler. I mean, there's just bad route or not, you can't make that throw. So that undoes a lot of good. Look, I'm going to tell you. We've said this before. I think it's very, very close. It may depend. Do you like an apple or do you like an orange? Because they're different guys. They bring different things to the table. And they both have shortcomings. And their shortcomings are also vastly different. So which piece of fruit do you want? That's what it may come down to. But I don't think there's any doubt, you know, that Geno is a high-risk, high-reward QB compared to Johnson, and that's just the way it's going to be. I don't think we're going to see much change in the next three games.
Well, they'll have the opportunity to tweak and make changes, but obviously this game is certainly a part of the evaluation process. It's also part of the evaluation process in terms of how the running game perhaps has progressed, Paul. And you look at the results, 23 rushes for 73 yards, just over 3 yards per carry. And Paul Perkins, who is penciled in to be the starter, 5 runs for just 3 yards. He had that initial 7-yard run right out of the gates. But after that, they did not get much going on the ground at all.
Coach McAdoo really wanted his starting offensive line to establish a running game early on this night, and he didn't get that. In fact, in the first quarter, the Giants ran the ball 6 times for 8 yards total. I don't think I need to say anything else. That's just not good. And I think you know, of all the things that we saw the other night, very few things were unexpected to me. Very few things were learned. It just, most of it reaffirmed what we already saw at training camp. But one of the few things that we did come away with was disappointment from the starting offensive line, which has shown so much better during the course of training camp, and then had a lot of trouble moving the ball the other night.
And then even the second-tier offensive line also had just as much trouble too, which maybe is not necessarily as surprising. You have a lot of young guys, but I think overall the offensive line certainly is going to use this film and can be very critical of itself because of the lack of production on offense and also the lack of consistency in terms of the ground game. I think from a positive standpoint,
there are three more games. That's the most positive.
That is a big positive. And also I think the other thing, which is extremely positive, is knock on wood, everybody pretty much came out of the game in very good shape, which I think is also a big positive.
Iheanacho with a hamstring was the only significant injury.
And that's on the defensive side, of course. At least from an offensive standpoint, everybody seemed to come out of this one in good shape, as I mentioned, and that's a big positive. You never want to lose anybody when it comes to a preseason game. Other observations in terms of the offense, Paul, fullback. Will Johnson went on IR before the start of last season. The Giants chose not to replace him. They had no fullback on the roster. They've got two in camp, three if you want to include Red Ellison, and they did showcase the fullback in a variety of different spots, especially in short yardage situations. Shane Smith and Jacob Usman both got opportunities. And the other positive I thought was Rhett Ellison being showcased as a receiver, where he had three catches in the span of four plays. And this is a player that Ben McAdoo said was underutilized in Minnesota, and they didn't waste any time going to work with him.
Not at all. Although I will tell you this, Ellison has caught everything thrown his way during training camp. So the fact that he caught those passes did not surprise me at all. The fact that they got him three receptions in token action was perhaps a surprise. But the guy's got hands. There's no question he can catch the ball. You know what? I guess he reminds me in some ways of Jake Ballard.
That's fair.
Not incredibly gifted athletically, but has tools, is tough, is physical, willing to do the dirty work, reliable. You know that he's going to know his assignments and he will be where he's supposed to be, and he knows how to play the game. So that's probably the best example I can give you. Maybe Jake Ballard-like, maybe Dan Campbell-like for those of you who are a little bit older. I will say this, in terms of the fullback situation, talking to Coach on the conference call the next day, when asked about the fullbacks, he stressed that how Smith had done well on special teams, missed some assignments in the backfield. He had more of a chance to play than Huseman did. But his best impressions were made on specials, not on offense. I'm still leaning towards keeping four tight ends and Ellison playing the fullback role and not keeping a standard fullback. However, as I've said, since they signed these rookie free agents, I think that one of them could wind up on the practice squad.
Very possible, given the fact that they're young, they're unproven, and I think with all of those players that are eventually going to be waived or cut, it's going to be very difficult to decipher who exactly you want to pick up. So I think the Giants have a good chance of retaining two of those players in particular if they do want to put them on the practice squad.
Think about this, Lance. If the Giants go with four tight ends and they believe that Ellison is going to take care of those 6, 7, 8, 10 fullback snaps a game, and he gets nicked up, okay, and let's say he's got to miss a couple games because something happened to him and he just couldn't go. Well, if they've got a fullback on the practice squad, at least they know, okay, look, the receiving tight end stuff, we got a couple of those guys who can go catch the ball anyway. But if we need someone to play that fullback spot that Ellison was playing, we could always grab the fullback off the practice squad and put him in there. See, last year they didn't have that.
They didn't have a lot of versatility in that department.
None.
Plus, Ellison could always play the fullback position, too, if you already have him on the roster.
Right.
And let's say you lose your other guy, you don't even have to necessarily make a transaction. You could just have him take on that role until the other players get healthy.
Well, again, I think this is because the Giants have a deeper roster in a lot of places than they had last season. And, you know, it's a good problem to have, because at least you know that you're dealing from a strength in terms of making these decisions instead of scratching your head saying, oh boy, what are we going to do? We don't have any answers.
And that's what they're testing the waters in right now, who can be moved around, mm-hmm. who can play multiple positions, because then I think that changes the outlook of the roster. If they know one guy could be a fullback, could be a tight end, could be an extra offensive lineman, you know, then maybe you don't have to keep two players to do three jobs when you have one guy that could essentially do three jobs. Flip it over on the defensive side of the ball. I thought there were a number of players that took advantage of their opportunities, Paul, and had really standout individual performances. Let's start with Jay Bromley. Robert Thomas does not play in this game because he's been dealing with soreness, though he did return to the practice field the other day, so hopefully he'll get back in the mix this week. So with Robert Thomas out of the equation, that opened the door for the likes of Jay Bromley and Dalvin Tomlinson. And I think Bromley said to himself, hey, this is an opportunity for me to separate myself from the rest of the competition. And he got three tackles. He got one for a loss. I thought he got great penetration in the backfield. You know, he seemed to be that overlooked player all offseason when we were talking about the candidates to replace Jonathan Hankins. And little by little, I think Jay Bromley's coming a real long way here.
The last week or so, he has definitely made a move and took advantage of Thomas not being in there. I thought that Dalvin Tomlinson also played well, and Coach mentioned him too. Maybe, just maybe. I mean, if Thomas comes back healthy in time for the season, and I think it's still pretty likely he makes it, maybe Jay Bromley's that fourth defensive tackle. Maybe they keep four instead of only three. I don't know. I was toying with the idea of three by keeping an extra defensive end because so many of those guys can slide inside. I was actually toying with cheating and trying to keep only three defensive tackles. That's risky. It's not something you really like to do. But, again, I think there's so much depth at defensive end. I mean, look what Delvin Taylor did.
Got the interception.
Devin Taylor came up with a terrific basketball-type George Martin, for you old folks, type of interception. That was terrific. That's the kind of depth they have at defensive end. So, you know, if you wanted to cheat and keep one of those guys extra, you're going to have to skimp and only go three defensive tackles. Jay Bromley's trying to make that a very hard decision.
Well, and one of the guys that can move inside and outside also at the defensive end position is Kerry Wynn, who I thought also had a very strong game. And he got the start in place of JPP, who did not play. Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting to at least see who may be that third guy on the depth chart right now.
Well, he had the most snaps at the position, so that made sense why they'd give it to him.
And listen, Kerry Wynn, I think in years past, because he's been on the roster for the last few seasons, not a flashy player, Paul, but you know what? Somebody that I think has earned the confidence of the coaching staff that if they move him in various spots, he will not be a liability and he'll take care of business.
Kerry Wynn, very smart, steady, reliable, good teammate, knows the game, knows everything that's got to be done either as a defensive end or as a defensive tackle, very willing and productive to play on special teams. He's a coach's dream, really. He's one of those guys that when you open up the toolbox and you reach for that screwdriver, you know it's going to work. That's what you like about Kerry Wynn. The problem is, last year, he was pretty quiet in terms of production. It's not that, you know, he was a bad guy all of a sudden, or he was lazy, or he didn't know what he was doing. It was just that when you saw the production, you said, well, those numbers don't add up. All these things that he does so well and we're so happy with, they didn't produce a whole lot of stats and a whole lot of big plays. And that's why, you know, going into this season, I thought he had a bit of a mountain to climb. But after game one of the preseason, you'd have to say he's injected himself back into that equation.
Yeah, he and Bromley, I think, took significant steps forward. Then again, you know, we tend to get caught up in looking at numbers all the time when evaluating players. But the coaching staff, I'm sure, is seeing other things on film where he was in the right position and he allowed another player to make a play because of his decision making, which is also a big part of football.
It is.
I think that goes without saying. How about B.J. Goodson? First opportunity for him to be in live game action as the middle linebacker. He said after the game communication wasn't a problem. And he had a great sack, which was maybe an easy sack because I think the floodgates opened.
But
you know
what?
You got to be able to anticipate those plays, and that's exactly what he did.
Well, if you look at that play again, what had happened was the offensive line and the rest of the offense was not on the same page for the Steelers. Okay? The receivers showed like they were going to block for a running play because they were pinching down, and they thought it was a run. The offensive line thought it was a pass play. That's how I saw it.
That's an issue.
Not good.
Yeah.
No, the confusion, if you would, on the Steelers' offense allowed Goodson, Giants at two-man extra pressure package. And so he came floating through an empty gap, and nobody bothered to pick him up, and he just went right at the quarterback, and boom, down. Hey, he had to make the play. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was a busted play by the Steelers, but that doesn't mean Goodson necessarily would follow through and complete his part of the play. But he did. That's good. That's good. I think you'd have to give him a solid review, arrows up for game one. Nothing that's going to put him next to Harry Carson in the Hall of Fame in Canton.
Only but, one game, and it's preseason.
But solid. Something to build on for him.
Something to also build on for Aldrick Rosas, who had an opportunity to now transfer what he's doing in practice to the game. They each knocked down both of their field goals, Mike Nugent and Aldrick Rosas. But to get an opportunity to convert on a 52-yarder in a preseason game, you can tell Ben McAdoo was excited after the game because this is what you want. You want to be able to test your kickers, Paul. And both of them delivered, but I think it was significant for Rosas especially to be in a game situation, fans all around him, and without a beat coming through.
I told the folks on the Fan and CBS and Sirius, I was on all over the place over the weekend, and I told them, I said, listen, you've got to watch Aldrick Rosas very carefully because the Giants want him to have to kick a 50-yarder because he hadn't kicked a 50-yarder since high school. Not in his college nor pro career had he made a 50-yard field goal. He had tried one 50-yarder at Southern Oregon in 2014, and he was short on a not-so-nice day. That's it. That's it. So now here he is, and we've seen him in practice hit 60, 65, 70 in warm-ups. But in a game, different deal.
Of course.
And so he gets out there, and he hits the 52-yarder. It was right in the middle, too. Not as deep as I've seen him hit them in practice. I mean, this one didn't have another 10 or 15 yards behind it. In practice, he routinely has plenty of room to spare. But nonetheless, he made it. It was down the middle, and I'm happy for the kid.
So that was big. Now, on the other side of special teams is protecting the football and a rough performance in terms of the return game. Dante Dion muffed a catch that led to an opportunity. And then even Travis Rudolph, they recovered that fumble, but he also lost one on a kickoff return.
Yeah, the muff by Dion was interesting because we had not really seen him do much in terms of punt returns during camp. And then Coach McAdoo, in wanting to see how much versatility he's got, trying to give him every opportunity to make the team, decided he was going to be the primary punt returner in the game against Pittsburgh. And I thought he handled everything else well, but there was that one punt where he muffed. And Coach was furious about it after the game. You could tell by his reaction. However, I will add this to you folks. In talking to the coach yesterday after practice, he was asked a generic question of the guys who had some struggles in the game against Pittsburgh. How many of those guys were you looking at today to see how they bounced back in practice? And he said there were several of those guys, and they got it right in practice. They did rebound, and that was good to see. He didn't mention names, but a guy who I immediately thought of was Dante Dion because he intercepted Eli Manning in the corner of the end zone yesterday at practice. Okay? Read the play beautifully, was underneath the route, corner of the end zone. Eli fires to the left side, and there's Dante Dion with the pick. Beautiful play, and I suspect that's one of the guys Coach was talking about in terms of bouncing back from what was a bit of a rough deal against the Steelers.
The key is, though, in order to make this roster, it's special teams. That's what's going to separate yourself from the rest of the pack, especially if you're not going to be on the field very much as a corner.
We don't expect him to be returning kicks on
specials, not at all.
Though.
He will not be the regular guy, but he needs to be able to prove that if called upon, he can certainly come through.
What he's got to do for me, more importantly on specials, he's got to be on those kick coverage units. You see, now, I'm curious, what does he do in these next three games? They gave him the chance to return the kicks. He had the one muff. Now do they stick him back on the coverage units to see how well he can get down there? Remember, that's what Charles James was so good at.
I was just going to say that name. Reminds me exactly of Charles James.
And he was good in kick coverage. That was one of the ways that, you know, he was able to at least scratch the surface of a roster in this league. Because he was good at that. I'd like to see Dante Dion do that too, but the other night he was strictly returning.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat, recapping preseason game number one. Your observations, your thoughts. Let's open up the phone lines. Conrad is in Manhattan. He gets us started. What's happening, Conrad?
Hey, great show this morning, guys.
Hi.
I am excited for the season. Just looking at the game, I was at the stadium on Friday. B.J. Goodson, I think he had a good game, but I also saw a couple plays that he did get beat. And I know this might be a learning curve for him as far as being with the starting group, so I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed. Overall, I think, P-Dot, you hit it right on the head. I think it's a good game he had. I wouldn't say he had an awful game, but he had a good game. The only thing that I saw that was a bit concerning to me was the running game. Paul Perkins did not look like the Paul Perkins of last year, where he was, you know, hitting the hole and, you know, creating certain holes and making certain plays. I'm not sure if it was the offensive line. I think they had an okay game. It wasn't great, but other than that, with the, and also our return game, that to me was, we look like we really need to either get somebody out there in the market or find somebody in the team that we could have confidence in that could return football.
Well, Conrad, keep in mind, I mean, the players that got the returns are not going to be the regular return men during the season. I mean, Dwayne Harris is not going anywhere, barring injury, so I don't think you should hit the panic button. If that's what we were talking about earlier, Paul, where, you know, you say, oh, these guys are not handling their roles, but they're going to be the insurance policies, not necessarily the regular guys that are going to be out there.
I would add two comments to what you said. First of all, B.J. Goodson did not get beat the other night. He had made some mental miscues. And there's a difference between when a guy gets beat, I'm thinking physically he was beaten on the play. That's different than missing some assignments. And I thought what B.J. Goodson had the other night was some missed assignments, and that's because experience, mentally, experience-wise, that's good. See, if he gets beat physically on plays, that's not so good because that's not a matter of experience. That's just not making the play. You understand? That's a big difference. Big difference.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay, and then go ahead. I just want to add, Travis Rudolph did actually a very good job on kickoff returns, and I can tell you he graded out extremely well because there was not much there for him to work with, and he caught the ball cleanly, and the one was ripped away.
Yeah,
but he caught it cleanly, fielded it cleanly, and actually ran straight ahead with assertiveness. I thought Rudolph had a good night on kickoff returns, to be honest, but you're right. He's not going to be doing it.
Yeah, I agree. So I think the defense look fast. They look stingy. They look like they're playing with a chip on their shoulder. I love the attitude of the defense. I mean, Lyndon Collins was just flying everywhere.
Yeah.
And the corners did not look like they wanted to get beat at all. Even the backups, when they came in a couple plays where, you know, Pittsburgh might have gotten a 10, they had a couple long plays, but the very first one they got, I think, was like a 15-yarder. And the defense came back and shut them down. And for crying out loud, Geno Smith did not look that bad. I was actually happy for the guy to see how he was playing. But I listened to you guys' comments. Great show, and I'm pumped up for the season, man. I am.
All right, Conrad. Appreciate the phone call. Landon Collins did make two plays off the bat in terms of coming up to the box, making a tackle, and then he had one on the right sideline. He was extremely active. He seemed like he was already in midseason form. I don't think that was necessarily a surprising development. In terms of the secondary group of corners, Valentino Blake had some mixed results because he obviously was beat on one of those deep touchdowns, both of those deep touchdowns, I should say, from Joshua Dobbs.
How do I say this? It was not a great night for depth in the secondary. How about I say it that way? We don't know. I'm not going to tell you exactly who was to blame, who was not to blame, because there are coaches' calls that we're not privy to. Yes, it did look like Valentino Blake had a tough time, even though he had one gift interception that was thrown right into his breadbasket.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was safety help that should have been there.
Matt Burhey slipped on one of them.
Burhey did
slip
on one.
You have to bring that to the forefront.
You know, and it looked like on the other bomb that he gave up, it looked like he was expecting somebody over the top, but nobody was home. So it can get a little tricky. It really can, especially in the preseason.
That's fair.
Trying to identify blame. But I think it's fair to say that that the depth chart at secondary right now, we've told you after the first three corners, it's anybody's guess. And we've also told you after the top three safeties, it's anybody's guess. And I think Friday night proved that. The depth chart in the secondary is a real big question mark. The Giants need to get through the season with their starting five. And I'm saying five because, again, I'm counting the three corners as virtual starters. And their two safeties. They need to get through the season with those starting five on the field. It's got to be. And then even last year, what happened? DRC goes out in the Green Bay game and they lose. That's going to be a very, very, very important position for the Giants. If they're going to pick somebody up right before opening day in that last roster purge, I would be really, really strongly looking at someone in the secondary and maybe even a backup at linebacker.
Ben McAdoo even admitted that he felt Darian Thompson was a bit rusty, which is not necessarily a surprise considering it was his first game. But, I mean, if the starters are also working out the kinks, it's understandable that some of these new faces in the secondary, you know, Michael Hunter is somebody that they're going to continue to keep close tabs on, evaluate. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Dante Dion, Valentino Blake's in the mix. I mean, those are the three major next group of corners that have an opportunity to compete for that fourth cornerback job.
Dante Dion played outside the other night. By the way, did you notice that?
He was outside. I did notice that a little. But remember, we've seen that before, too, going back to last year.
And that didn't work out well last year.
Yeah.
And so this year in training camp, he has basically been a slot corner, done some outside work, but been a slot corner, which is where I think he should make the team. Well, fired against Pittsburgh, they threw him outside. Okay, go ahead, take another shot. See what you can do out there. He actually held up pretty good, to be perfectly frank with you. He held up pretty well. Again, we're not talking about Big Ben throwing the ball either.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's a big difference. I suspect if, like, a Drew Brees was back there, they would have tried to pick on him a little bit more, and they might have had more success. But given what was on the field Friday night, Dante Dion more than held his own on the outside.
And that's all he could do. I mean, we could sit here and talk about all the hypotheticals. He can only deal with what he's handed and the opportunities he has on the field. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that because you can't just assume that your fourth corner is automatically going to come in and play the slot. What happens if one of your outside corners gets hurt?
But I am telling you, if they're playing the Redskins and Kirk Cousins sees Dante Dion on the outside, that's where he's going with the ball.
Yes. Well, I think any good quarterback who has experience would try to attack the guy that has the least amount of experience on the opposing side.
And the least amount of height.
Yes, too, of course, which is why Buffalo attacked him in the last preseason. Let's head back to the phone lines. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Hey, Len.
All right, Len. What do you got for us?
Hey, live football. That was great. It's going to be fun. Can't wait for the next game. You know, a couple of things I mentioned last week. I was going to be watching Tomlinson, and as always, kind of a personal favorite, going to be watching Kerry Wynn on the defensive side, and I was rewarded for that. I thought Tomlinson played very well. And, you know, Paul, you made a really good comment earlier in the show about Wynn, an undrafted free agent. And, again, kind of a personal favorite. You know, he's made this team 2 years in a row, and it looks like he's heading toward a good chance to make it in this third year with the game that he had the other night. He always seems to play better in the regular season, and I don't want to use the word disappear, but, you know, it doesn't translate to the regular season. His preseasons are a lot better than the regular season.
Right, right.
But he had a nice game the other night, and I did enjoy seeing that. I enjoyed the physicality. You know, you've heard me say this before. I never liked to play the Steelers. A little chip, particularly in a first preseason game. I mean, it's just who they are. They're not a dirty team. They just play tough, play to the whistle. And I thought Landon Collins set a tone. Lance, you said he made the first two plays, and he did. Terrific plays. But the physicality on his part in those first two games, I like that. I like that, and I think it kind of leveled the playing field with the Steelers on that score. You know, offensively, the offensive line, I'm going to make a bold prediction here, guys. I think they're going to play better on Monday night, and I'll tell you why I think that. They're playing a 4-3 team.
Mm-hmm.
This team, you know, one thing I wanted to see the other night led to my disappointment. I really wanted to play better against the 3-4 team. The last couple of years, they just don't match up. They can't handle the physicality inside. No names here. they just can't handle the physicality inside. They play better against 4-3 teams than they do against 3-4 teams.
No doubt.
And I think that will show. Now, one more good news. I think we opened this season. I think 7 of the first 8 teams are 4-3 teams.
Yes.
A couple of them may play kind of a hybrid 4-3. They have a nose tackle. Detroit plays, you know, the huge man who played down here for the Ravens for a while. Nada.
Haloti Nada, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 350 pounds. They play a 4-3, but Nada plays over the center. He plays a traditional nose tackle type
yep.
role. But so I think against the 4-3 team, you know, against Cleveland, I think we'll see some. I don't know what the reason is, but maybe it's the strength thing. They just don't seem to play well against 3-4 teams. You guys have any comments on that? Any observations?
Well, I don't think there's any question.
I'm frustrated by that. I thought we'd get better.
Yeah, well, I think the disappointment in the O-line the other night was very palatable. And I would say this, by the way, just about the defense for 1 second. Yes, Collins was incredible the other night. And even though the Steelers were at less than full strength offensively, they only had 4 first downs in the first half. I mean, the Giants' first and second units on defense, especially that front, played extremely well. And, I that was not a surprise. Okay, that was not a surprise. We expected that out of them.
Right.
In terms of your thoughts on the 3-4, usually in a 3-4 defense, that nose tackle is a big, hulking, burly piece of a mountain. You know, those are the guys who are usually 330, 345, 350, okay? And you are right. Look, I happen to really like Weston Richburg. I think he's a heck of a center, and he's a terrific technician. But he's much along the lines of what Bart Oates was and what Sean O'Hara was. That is, he is an undersized center who wins with effort, his technical aptitude, and his intelligence. When he goes up against the bigger, stronger, burlier, and bulkier nose tackles who are going to be right on top of him in a 3-4, he has some trouble. And that's and that's where it starts, okay?
Yeah.
That's where it starts. Because let's face it.
You got to get, if you're playing a 3-4 defense, I always thought, Paul, and if you're playing a 3-4 defense, the first thing you have to do, the very first thing you have to do if your offense is going to move, you have to block the nose tackle.
Yeah, but see,
the linebackers run rampant.
And Len, again, the good news for the Giants, you know, with all the other things going for a guy like Richburg, much like O'Hara and much like Bart Oates, you can still win championships in this league with a slightly undersized center, provided they've got good help on their flanks and of course, they've got the intelligence and the technique to be able to at least make it competitive against those guys who will physically overmatch them.
Yes, you know, we had the same, I did myself, and many others had the same concerns about O'Hara, as you pointed out, Paul. And good to remember, O'Hara went to the Pro Bowl 2 or 3 times.
Sure. 3 times,
So he may have had the same problem that Weston is having. But like you said, well said, Paul, he made it to the Pro Bowl. He was a heck of a good center. Hey, can I say some things on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, real quick, Len. What do you got?
Okay, all right. Just a quick housekeeping. Who was the fullback on the first play? Somehow I missed it. The Perkins handoff, 8 yards, 9 yards, whatever it was. Who was? Do you guys remember who the lead guy was in that? Who was playing fullback? If you can't, let me go on to something else. It's okay.
Offhand, I cannot remember.
I don't remember, but I want to say it was Shane Smith. But I could be mistaken.
Smith got more snaps at fullback than Huseman did, but I will also tell you the Giants did use Ellison and they did even use Engram a couple of times there, too.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I think that's an indication that we want to use more of a fullback as we move into the season. I don't know if it's Shane Smith, you know, a traditional fullback. That's the whole position. He probably won't get on – with this passing attack, he's probably not going to get on the field a whole lot. But and I don't know if you can use a position for a guy who's maybe only going to be on the field, although I understand only going to be on the field for a few plays, although I understand he played pretty well on special teams.
He did.
I have no observation on whether that's true or not.
He did,
Now, and, of course, one of the, and we'll, I'll I'll stop my questioning and just say one thing. I'd like to have a conversation with you guys somewhere over the next couple of weeks. How do we keep a traditional fullback? How do we keep a Smith? Where do we short ourselves if we go with a Shane Smith? Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Looking forward to the season, guys.
All right, Len, appreciate the phone call.
You can go five wide receivers. That's one way to do it instead of six.
Or you go three tight ends.
Go three tight ends instead of four.
It's not that complex.
They were able to do that when they kept Henry Anoski.
Yep. They usually kept three tight ends in those circumstances.
You could do it.
I went back and I looked at some of the rosters when they did keep the fullback, and normally they'd sacrifice the additional tight end more so than the additional wide receiver, mm-hmm. which to me makes sense. And the fact that Red Ellison could play fullback maybe makes it a little bit easier for them to keep only three tight ends because you have some versatility out of one of those tight ends. And they're obviously trying to develop Engram into a multifaceted tight end. All right, let's head back to the lines. Carl is in Syracuse. Carl, what's happening? How we doing, Carl? All right, Carl is a man of very few words, apparently, this morning. We'll see if we can get Carl back on the phone lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Twitter as well, hashtag Giants Chat. All right, let's try, how about Christian in Virginia? No, Christian in Virginia's not there? Okay, how about Greg in Atlanta? Greg, how's everything?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Doing well, Greg.
How you doing, Paul?
Hi.
I'm calling, man, and I don't know if this has been discussed because I'm just airing, tuning into you guys. But so if it's already been talked about, please forgive me. But I'm calling in because I didn't really get to see the preseason game, but I saw some highlights. And what was very disturbing to me is to watch J.J. Watt's little brother beat Ereck Flowers two times. Well, the first time he beat him, the second time Ereck Flowers ran right past him and went to the second level and started blocking. I just can't understand. I'm not comfortable with my third-year veteran left tackle playing the way he played. I am appalled by it. Like, it just, after all the off-season stuff they said he did and the hard work he put in, could y'all please explain to me what I saw? Because I'm not comfortable with what I saw going into the season.
Well, McAdoo mentioned one of those plays that you're referring to. Josh Johnson, if you recall, steps up into the pocket and basically aids the sack because it made it a little bit easier for T.J. Watt to say, thank you very much, I will take this sack and I will move on and have another. And I think you have to take that into consideration. And I'm not trying to say that Ereck Flowers was outstanding in the first preseason game, but I think whenever you evaluate and you look at a sack, there's more to it than just how the offensive line performed. There were also quarterback movements and decisions that played into sacks. Ben McAdoo also mentioned one of the sacks was or could have been avoided if the quarterback just threw the football away. So those, I think, played into some of the sacks in Friday's game as opposed to breakdown specifically on the offensive line or specifically against Ereck Flowers.
Okay, okay. And I'm going to make two more comments and then I'm done. One is the Color Rush uniforms. Our Color Rush is all white. I wish the Giants would refer back to the red uniform. We were successful when we wore the red tops, and we ain't wear them in a, you know, add some spice, let the young guys be happy that the color changed. They seem to play better when you give them a, when you look good, you play better, is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, I wish they would change it up and bring the red jerseys back. And,
No. I feel like a bobblehead. No.
He said he feel like a bobblehead.
Not digging that one at all. Not digging that one at all. I actually liked the throwback white, all white jerseys to the Phil Simms era. I thought that was a really cool way to go. And I applaud Joe Skiba, the equipment manager, for coming up with that. And of course, John Mara approved it, and then Nike wound up producing it. And I thought that the Giants probably had the best of all the throwback uniforms because I think that those Thursday night color rush uniforms are garbage. I can't stand them at all.
I think you should tell us how you truly feel.
I think they're terrible. Okay. I think most of them are terrible.
I like them, Paul. I like the color. I just like them trying to make a change to what we see every day. You know.
Yeah, Greg likes to spice things up. I hear you, Greg.
And lastly, I just would like to say that I want the Giants to be successful this year, and coming out the gate, it's just the offense just didn't look. But I understand certain people didn't play. I understand that. And I understand that the coach can't give defenses too much to look at. But it just was horrible to see, man. That's all. And you guys have a great day. I'm a huge Giants fan. I still think we're going to be successful. But that was just terrible for me to see.
All right, have a good day. Appreciate the
phone
call.
Thank goodness it was only a game number one of the preseason. Yes. By the way, Len, if you're still watching or listening, it was Shane Smith.
Okay,
who
that's
was
who
the
I thought
fullback
it was, yeah.
on the 7-yard Perkins run. I just went back and looked at the cut-up on it, and that's who it was. It was Smith.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Carl in Syracuse. Carl, what do you have for us?
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Carl?
Hey, good. How are you?
Doing all right.
Since we're on the Shane Smith topic, I had to say that for a big man at his size, that little outlet pass they threw to him, he got around pretty good to get his body around and catch that ball. He looked pretty smooth catching the ball.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something that he's going to have to continue to showcase if it warrants them keeping a fullback. They want to make sure that the fullback can also go out and catch some passes. Paul mentioned Henry Heinoski. Heinoski was a good receiver when he played for the Giants. I mean, think about some of the other fullbacks that have been here in Giants history. Jim Finn and all these other guys, you know, they had some versatility to them. Madison Hedgecock, they want to know that the fullback can also, in a pinch, go out and at least make a catch or two.
Not so much Hedgecock.
Well, I'm not saying that, but the point is, I don't think he was such a liability
and
that if
so
he didn't want to throw
either,
the football.
But I agree with what you're saying. You want to be able to at least make him a viable option.
That's
just
the
in
bottom
case.
Line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A couple of the things that clearly stuck out, some of them we've pointed on already. Josh Johnson looked very indecisive, I thought was the good word to use, indecisive.
Yeah.
He was holding onto the ball too long, didn't look like he could make a decision fast enough.
Understood. You know, it was not a pretty night, I didn't think, for either of the candidates for the number two spot. They both had their deficiencies and warts on their game. Smith did have some more highlight moments than Johnson did, but there are still three preseason games to go, which is why I think that competition is still open.
And that is one of the flaws in his game, Smith, from the past, is his interceptions.
Yep.
He always looks very sharp at times and then just makes that bonehead play.
Well, that's why we've got to see more games to see who can separate themselves. After one game, it's hard to, you know, make bold declarations. I think they're going to continue to get more playing time. Of course, Eli's going to get some snaps, too. He played in preseason game number 2 and 3 last year, so they're going to work him in. But that doesn't mean that Geno Smith and Josh Johnson are not going to have opportunities to correct the wrongs and perhaps start to make some separation here.
Based on Coach McAdoo's M.O., and we have seen him try to be as fair as he can with every competition to this point while he's been in this organization, I'm going to guess that Geno Smith gets the second reps after Eli and Josh Johnson gets third reps. And by the way, should we mention, please, Davis Webb in his pro debut, he did look a little jacked up and did miss on a few throws, but I thought he did pretty well.
8 of 16 for 67 yards, and he also took a sack. Those were his numbers.
Yep. And the other one was mentioned already. Kerry Wynn was just everywhere.
And that's what he's been known for doing in the past.
What a motor he has.
Yeah. Listen, Kerry Wynn's done this before. I remember it was the preseason a few years ago. Israel Adonijé was brought in very late in training camp. And to be honest with you, Israel Adonijé, I thought, was more impressive than Kerry Wynn in the preseason. And I was anticipating maybe Adonijé sneaks in, gets the last spot in the defensive end group, and then all of a sudden, Kerry Wynn surprisingly makes the roster, and a part of it was what he did in practice every day. He really caught the eye of the coaching staff, an undrafted rookie at the time out of Richmond. He wasn't from a powerhouse school.
At that time, though, a little bit of a different set of circumstances because Adonijé was probably on his last legs. As a matter of fact, after the Giants cut him, he didn't go anywhere else, and he retired.
Yeah.
And Wynn was a guy who they thought, well, this guy's got some ups. You know, let's see what happens. He could develop and actually have, some years to go with an upside. And so that also factored into the deal because I did think that Adonijé's plays were more productive during the preseason to that point. But they went with the younger guy, and that's why Kerry Wynn was able to make it for a couple of years here.
I think I've seen Eli get tricked with that defensive end dropping into coverage like we did to Dobson there.
That zone blitz can really be one heck of a play when it works. When it doesn't work, though, you got a defensive lineman helplessly trying to cover somebody, and it's not pretty.
Yep. I think everybody's been caught in that situation. Appreciate the phone call, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Middle. Thanks for tuning in to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're recapping preseason game number one, taking your phone calls, your observations, your thoughts as the Giants now prepare for game two, which will be in Cleveland on Monday night, a week from tonight. Christian is in West Virginia. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hi.
Hello, Christian.
I think you guys alluded to, we talked a little bit about Deion. I think everybody agrees with what you're saying, Paul, about him being more suited to play inside. You said he played a lot outside, which I noticed too during the game. And I'm wondering if you think that they, the coaches, and that this isn't just our team, this is all the teams around the league. So let's say they know that Dante Deion, they know him more than all the other teams because they see him every day in practice. Do you think they use some of those reps in the game to put him in uncomfortable positions that they necessarily don't want him to be in ever in the season, but it's good to get those live game reps to say something does happen in an emergency situation where Deion does have to go outside and that they can put some of that on film? Is that, or do you think that they truly just train all the corners the same and give them equal opportunities at all three of the spots?
I think it's a little of both. They are trying to give everybody an opportunity in this competition to either earn their way on the team or play themselves off the team. And
right.
I really believe that, you know, when you see a guy like Dante Deion and you focus on his strengths and say, well, okay, we're pretty sure he can play slot corner, but we don't know if he can do this other stuff. Well, this is the time to find out. You know, and they found out in Buffalo last year that it was not a good thing to put him on the outside. So now he comes back for his second year. He's got a little more seasoning, a little more experience. Well, now let's give him another chance. He failed on the outside last preseason. Let's see if he can do it now. So it's a little of both. It's about competition, but it's also about testing the limits of the guy that you're trying to look at.
Right. Sticking kind of on the same topic, a lot's been made about the depth after DRC. I hear you guys voice a little bit of concern about that. And, I mean, I think that's legitimate, but I want to know relative to the NFL, the other 31 teams, do you think our depth is significantly worse than, I mean, corner's a tough spot to play in the league and they don't grow on trees. The rest of the 31 NFL teams, do you feel our talent is significantly less after you get past the third corner? Or do you think we're on par with the rest of the NFL when it comes to your fourth, your fifth, your sixth guys?
I don't think there's that much of a drop-off when you look at the rest of the NFL landscape. You know, Denver has three solid starters like the Giants do, and then when you get beyond the three, they're testing out some rookies, and they also have some veterans. I think it's – if you look at all the NFL rosters –
look like guys like Deion and Blake.
I wouldn't say that every roster has guys that look like Deion and Blake. I mean, in terms of size, I think there's a number of other teams.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean in prestige. You're not going to have a corner there that started, you know, 25 games.
Well,
he's
you know
not going to be a fourth corner.
Well, it all depends on – there are some free agents as they get to the later stages of their career, Christian, that they are willing to go to a contender and be a fourth corner. But it's very hard.
Like Leon Hall.
But it's very hard to get everybody to buy into that. That's why most guys that are competing for the fourth cornerback spot are undrafted rookies, or journeymen that sort of just bounced around over the course of their careers. I mean, take, for example, Trevin Wade, who was the fourth corner in years past. Trevin Wade, before he came to the Giants, everybody made it out to be like he was a rookie. No, Trevin Wade was on a few NFL teams. He was with Cleveland. He was in Indianapolis. He bounced around. And there's a lot of guys that's what their MO is, and that's how they survive. In the NFL, and I would agree with you. I think if you go around, you look at the rosters, most teams rely on journeymen and rookies to be their fourth or their fifth corner, unless they hit and they struck gold in the draft and they already were set with three solid veterans, and then the rookie becomes the fourth guy, and then by year two,
all of a sudden,
he looks like a vet.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one more question. I don't want to take up too much time, and this is just, I'm trying to put your opinion. So put yourself in the shoes of a guy on the roster bubble. So say you're Dante Dion, and we've already kind of talked about him. I didn't want to talk about him this much, but let's just use him as an example. So you're obviously a fringe. Your roster spot's not secure. So they put you on punt return, which we haven't really heard a lot about him returning punts in the offseason so far. So they put you on punt return. My question is, if it is you, if it is Lance, if it is Paul, and you are Dante Dion fielding that punt, I understand that you need to make a splash to make the team, but if you fumble, you know, that's going to be the negative effect of that. So the mental approach, if you're Dante Dion and that ball's in the air, do you feel when that ball's coming down, hey, I need to make a play to make this team? Or do you play that more conservatively just with the interest of getting a job with the New York Giants? And do you fair catch that? Do you just secure it? Like, what would be your approach in that situation?
Well, that's a fair question, okay? But first of all, yeah. Let me understand. I can't be in Dion's shoes. Maybe Lance could, because I haven't been that short since I was about 8 years old. So let me just get that out of the way right now. But I would say this. It's okay. I would say this. You make a fair point. Bottom line is he muffed the ball, and the coach doesn't want to hear about your logic or your explanation. All he knows is you didn't field the ball cleanly. And you know what? The referee and the opponent, they don't care what your logic is either. They just muffed it, and the other team got the ball.
Correct. But I will say this, Christian, and we'll let you continue before we let you go. Coaches can sense when players play timid. And they start overthinking. Yep. And I think from experience, most players will tell you when you start thinking too much, it actually winds up coming back to bite you. Because Evan Engram mentioned when he first got on the practice field, he was thinking too much. And that's why he wasn't playing effectively. And Ben McAdoo noticed that and said to him, listen, you just got to let loose. You can't be thinking too much. And he mentioned that ever since he stopped thinking and just went out and played, even if he makes a mistake, it's not the end of the world. Bromley said the same thing. Jay Bromley, interestingly, mentioned the last few years – he would always play not to make mistakes. And he said that that sort of held him back. Mm-hmm. And then he got to the point where he noticed Jonathan Hankins and Snacks, they get out on the field, they make mistakes. And you know what? They put it behind them, and then they go through the situation of the play, and they continue on. And then he said, you know what? I'm going to adopt that mindset. So, honestly, to answer your question,
can't
if I'm Dante Dion,
you
can't play timid. I think you just got to go through the circumstances of the play, and if it's calls for you to be aggressive and catch it, then make the catch and go about your business.
Short memory.
Okay. One more, and we'll talk about just the quarterback real quick. I heard you guys, I've listened to the show from the beginning. I heard you guys talk about Geno and Johnson, and they definitely have their flaws, but I mean, I feel that that's far for the course. That's why they're backup quarterbacks. That's why Geno Smith doesn't start anymore.
That's a good point.
But I mean, that's not a knock. That's not a knock on them. Not everybody
can
be a starter.
It's very fair.
But I do think that Geno shows a lot more presence in the pocket in this offense, and he's only been in a short time. It's kind of disappointing to see Josh Johnson. He did have the season last year, and he's had the full offseason this year, where Geno's had the knee.
Yep.
I do really think that Geno, although he didn't set the world on fire, I think he took a lot of steps forward. I'm eager to see how he progresses through the offseason. And I think I saw yesterday that he was the number two quarterback, where he had been operating as the number three in practice. Not that.
Well, they've been alternating. Yeah, they've been alternating. I wouldn't read too much into that, Christian.
Yeah. I know. I know they flip flop guys all the time. And then I'll take the next one off the air.
Real quick.
Okay, I'm sorry. As far as keeping six defensive ends, if we were to do that, do you think what at the defensive ends do you think would spend majority of the time being asked to kick down inside, and which ones do you think are most equipped to do that? Then I'll take the question off there. Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate the call. Well, I think it goes without saying Kerry Wynn could play both positions easily.
So can Aquara. Those are the two right
Devin
off the bat.
Devin Taylor hasn't been utilized yet
they
enough.
They haven't. He did in Detroit.
And
JPP can also go inside.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have some versatility there where if you didn't keep additional defensive ends, we were talking about this earlier, I think there's enough options for Spags to say, you know what, if I want to put four defensive ends on the field, I could put JPP and Wynn inside, and then I can use two other guys on the outside. Yeah. Before we get back to phone calls, there have been some transactions that the Giants made here. Just want to go through them. Kevin Norwood suffered a hip injury in practice, so he was waived injured. So was Colin Thompson, the tight end. He was waived, though, with a non-football injury because he unfortunately underwent an appendectomy.
Right.
So to replace those two, they've signed linebacker Chris Kasher-Faulkner and signed wide receiver Andrew Terzilli, who's a local kid out of Rutgers.
Casher was actually from Florida State first and then transferred to Faulkner for his final season. Interesting in that the Giants are calling him a linebacker. He played a defensive end in college at Florida State. In fact, he was a pass rushing specialist off the edge. They're listing him at 6'4", 260 pounds, and had spent this offseason as a rookie undrafted free agent with the Raiders.
And then Terzilli is 6'4", 197. He played in three games for Tennessee in 2015, and he also spent a month with the Niners practice squad in 2015. He was signed by the Lions to their practice squad after that, so he's bounced around a little bit throughout the NFL, but they clearly brought in those two players to replace the two that were waived because of injuries on the football field or not on the football field. So Thompson was somebody who had flashed here or there during the course of OTAs, but unfortunately the timing of everything will impact whether or not you can make the roster, and he underwent an appendectomy. All right, let's head back to the phone lines as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Dave is in Cranford. Dave, what's happening?
How are you guys? Always great to talk to you.
Hi.
Doing well, Dave. What do you got for us?
A couple things. I mean, first of all, I really think, and I know, you know, you want to control expectations, but I really think that this defense this year, you know, if you look at last year and the way that the defense matured, you know, they really made progress, you know, after 8, 9, 10 games into the season and really became a force. And I think that, you know, when you look at this year, I really think they have a chance to be, you know, take some significant steps up from last year. And I think that that's, you know, a very, very interesting kind of, you know, view of how the season could go. And I think the other thing was being there on Friday night, I'm not sure you guys talked about it a lot, but Rosas, I mean, I think really showed himself well. I mean, not only that 52-yard kick, and I think if I remember right, it was raining at the time. I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect. And he didn't just make that. He split the uprights and probably cleared it, you know, 3 or 4 yards from a 52-yard, you know,
yeah, but kick. But in practice, he clears them by about 10 to 15. So we've seen him do better. However, he made it. It was down the middle. Good. Big thumbs up for Rosas. But I'll tell you, based on what we've seen during the offseason, his leg's even better than that. What you saw ain't nothing yet.
And that's great to think about, Paul, because, you know, you think back to the Green Bay game, and there were a couple plays. I mean, that game, you know, went a bunch of different directions, but you know, one of our kickoffs, I mean, there was a bunch of special teams plays that really started to turn that game in Green Bay's favor.
That's true.
And if we could have a player that could be, we're just thinking about a guy holding down a spot. He becomes a weapon. Mm-hmm. Now this team turns into a whole other dimension.
I agree. And don't forget, Coach McAdoo has often called Brad Wing a weapon as well.
Change field position. That's what he could do.
I agree, guys. So again, but I'd love to get your comments too about your expectations on the defense, because I really think that when you think of B.J. Goodson, when you think about what you're getting from Bromley, maybe what you're going to get from Dalvin, and I think you're going to see a rotation with those guys. There's a lot of talk about who's starting. I don't really care. I think they're going to play a bunch of snaps together. Mm-hmm. You know, again, health is always a factor. So, I mean, you know, you got to go in assuming that everyone's healthy. But it's not just the impact players on defense. It's the leadership on defense from Landon Collins, you know, all the way to OV and JPP and Snacks Harrison.
Casillas.
You know, Casillas. The leadership on that defense, I mean, it's stacked. I mean, they have guys that are going to hold each other accountable and bring it every week. I think they got a chance to be, I think top five is the ceiling for them. I think they can go lower than that.
Well, remember, keep in mind, this was the number two scoring defense in the NFL last season.
Number one in the NFC in terms of fewest points.
Exactly. So, I mean, when you say they're going to move up leaps and bounds, I think that they were pretty solid last season.
They just need to hold serve.
Correct. That's what I think they need to do. And I think what you hope that happens is, you know, Dave mentioned Jay Bromley, B.J. Goodson. You want those players to be able to fill the voids left behind by the players that are no longer on the team. You know, Jonathan Hankins, you know, there's competition in camp, but Jonathan Hankins was a stable guy that you figured when you put him out on the field, you knew what you were going to get. And Bromley hasn't had nearly as much experience in terms of consistently lining up next to Snacks in game situations. So you want to make sure that that doesn't drop off. Those, to me, are the wild card. Same thing with Goodson now being the main guy in the middle.
I just want to add one thing about what you said regarding the leadership on this team. It has gone so unnoticed and so under the radar, but DRC has become a leader on this defense. Very quietly, and he won't even admit it because he's so shy and bashful about it and very modest about it. But the truth of the matter is, after a year of sensational play last season out of him, he has really kind of taken the throat of this defense, like his former buddy and predecessor, Antrell Roll.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he has taken on a lot of responsibility in that locker room, and I think the Giants are better for it.
Dave,
I think Harrison, Paul, I would just agree with you, but I would also throw Harrison into that mix. He shies away from the thought that he's a leader, but I guarantee you that team looks at him as one of the stalwarts of that defense.
Yeah.
And it speaks volumes of the chemistry that they have both on and off the field. Appreciate the phone call, Dave. Let's try to squeeze in one more. How about Armando in Florida? Armando, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Hi. Well, Armando, what do you got for us?
I know my last two callers stole everything from me as far as asking for the defense. But I don't think Valentino is a great cornerback to me. I know he might be signed as a fourth cornerback, but that interception that he caught was probably about a mile back away from getting burnt. If that was Ben Roethlisberger, it would have been a touchdown. I think it was three catches that he got caught on him, and those three catches he was nowhere to be found. Do you think behind Blake there's Deion and maybe Michael Hunter Jr.? Is there anybody else there? I really don't think that this guy would be a great fourth cornerback for us. I feel like he'll be more as a liability than anything.
I'm going to put it to you this way. Remember what Coach McAdoo says all the time. It's not just about competing with guys on your team. You're competing with the other guys on the other 31 teams in the league. I think the back of that depth chart in the secondary is competing against all the other guys in the league who are going to get let go.
And there will be a lot of players let go.
And I can't say it any more succinctly than that. Have a good day. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Armando. Yeah, Valentino Blake, we talked about this earlier. I think you got to take into consideration the lack of safety help, Nat Burhe slipped on one of them. And as far as the interception is concerned, you got to make the plays, whether they're easy or difficult.
Yes, you do.
You
got to
make
true.
The plays. And I will say, I thought, and I still am not 100% certain, Paul, but I think Kerry Wynn got a piece of Joshua Dobbs' arm. And that is the reason why the ball was underthrown.
I'm not sure.
From what I've seen on the replay, not 100%,
Possible.
I believe Wynn got a piece of his arm. Nonetheless, Valentino Blake was in a position to make a play. He made the play. Well, that is going to wrap up things for us here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're with you each and every weekday the rest of the week at 10 a.m. Eastern. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets as the team will practice. Today's the last open practice for the public. So,
and 6 p.m. tonight, MSG, I'll be with Sean O'Hara.
Sounds good. All right, we'll speak to you tomorrow. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Beto. Have a good one.